Welcome to the tax update for May 2014, and in this month's edition we've got six items, beginning with a report that the House of Lords Committee has recommended reform of IR35, which is long overdue given that this legislation was very bad legislation and should never have been enacted and simply doesn't work, with the yield being a small fraction of what was originally claimed and the burdens which it imposes on businesses being quite disproportionate to the effect it achieves. If HMRC really wanted a solution, what they should do is limit the amount of payment by way of dividend to challenge profit extraction, saving NIC by way of dividend. As usual, this podcast is accompanied by detailed notes, and it contains a link to the 66-page report published by the House of Lords. This month also saw the development of the Icebreaker Tax Avoidance Scheme, which failed and got a number of high-profile stars some very adverse publicity. This illustrates that entering into an avoidance scheme can take a long time to resolve, and if it should be challenged by HMRC leading to a public hearing, the adverse publicity could well damage the individual who sought the avoidance scheme, their business prospects and their reputation. The particular arrangements were circular, and by using arrangements of borrowing money, it gave the appearance that the payments, which were claimed to be revenue expenses, created large losses. But in fact, the tribunal ruled that the accounts were not UK GAAP compliant and that most of the payments were in fact capital. Therefore, the scheme simply did not create the losses being claimed and it just failed. It's a 147-page decision, and it took 6 months from the hearing to the judgment being delivered. And I think there's a number of messages which must question whether entering an avoidance scheme is worthwhile given the passage of time before certainty is achieved, the potential damage to reputation, and the possibility that an artificial scheme might fail. HMRC have published toolkits which aims to help agents identify common errors, and the two most recent ones designed for the 2013-14 returns are income tax losses at 18 pages and then one on personal and private expenditure at 21 pages. HMRC are also continuing their policy of naming and shaming those taxpayers who have deliberately defaulted in their returns, leading to a loss of tax of more than £25,000. And the list of defaulters now runs to 21 pages. I think the naming and shaming policy is wrong, because the effect on somebody caught out in a small community will be quite different from the effect on somebody in a large anonymous city. And so I don't think it's an even policy. HMRC have also tried to improve their website, and everything is going to be migrated to the cross-government GOV UK website, but they've started by transferring their employment income manual as a test case, and it's certainly worth having a look at this to see if it suits your usage, because this is the most heavily used area. But finally, just to mention that the car benefits legislation, which creates the fiscal fiction deeming a car made available by an employer to an employee to be a benefit in kind, creating a Class 1A national insurance liability, has trapped yet another, I'll say innocent in inverted commas, taxpayers. Reading the MC and LJ IVE Limited case, I felt a sinking feeling from the start, because the arguments the taxpayer was using, that the company had contracted with the car provider under a lease agreement, but all the sums had been charged to the director's loan account, and therefore the company was not actually bearing the cost, had been tried and tested before in cases like Whitby and Stanford Management. What is interesting about this case is that the HMRC had discovered the existence of these company cars on a compliance visit, but had then taken a number of years exchanging correspondence before finally issuing an assessment and discovery assessments. But the taxpayer had taken advice, and although the position adopted was incorrect, they hadn't acted without taking reasonable care, and therefore the mistake meant that the assessments could only go back 4 years and not six, which would have applied if there had been a failure to take reasonable care. As usual, there's a link to the full decision. This is an area of legislation which is desperately unfair and is a trap for the unwary, and this is definitely a case that's worth a read. Thanks for listening.